from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, the Supremes can't read, Portland riots are a myth, the real agenda of Black Lives Matter, and Big Tech won't expose Marxism. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. A little more than a week ago, the Supreme Court refused to stop the state of Nevada from severely restricting church services while at the same time leaving casinos open with much looser guidelines. Here's Tony Perkins discussing the case with Missouri Senator Josh Hawley.
Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me.
I would just put this before you. Are we not in trouble when the Supreme Court cannot distinguish between a constitutionally protected right, the exercise, free exercise of religion, and the ability to go in and play slot machines? If we can't distinguish between those two, I would suggest we're in trouble.
Big trouble. Big trouble. And not only because, Tony, this disparate treatment is a problem, but the truth is the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States gives churches and the right to worship a special status. I mean, it's bad enough that churches in Nevada and elsewhere are being treated as second-class institutions and treated worse than liquor stores or gambling halls or casinos or whatever else. That's bad enough. But in fact, the Constitution gives them a special protected status, and this court is so far from recognizing that. This decision on Friday is really a travesty. It is totally unjustifiable, and I think it's quite significant that the majority was silent. They didn't write. I'd love to see them try to explain this outrageous decision.
You know, I'm not surprised at the order from Governor Sisolak, because when you look at Nevada, they generate over a third of their state's budget comes from casino revenue. About $1.5 billion annually comes from casinos, and they do not generate any monetary value over churches, although I would argue that the value of the churches being active is much more important to the overall climate and stability of the state. But for the Supreme Court, I mean, their focus is on the Constitution. That's it. That's all they need to do. And in this case, they took a pass allowing these stringent regulations on churches to remain intact. And I go back to what I opened with, Senator Hawley, because you've been an outspoken defender of the Constitution. But when we have a country that is ruled by law, the Constitution being that rule of law, and that's undermined by the court, what we see is government is undermining its own authority, and people begin to distrust government more and more.
Well, in this case, Tony, I think it's even worse than taking a pass. What the court did on Friday is they endorsed, a majority of the court endorsed this discriminatory set of practices by Nevada. It's also happening in California. It's happening in a number of states across the country where churches are being singled out for disfavor. I mean, once again, in Nevada, you can have casinos, including, by the way, the casinos convention center, their stage and arena areas, those can all be filled at 50% capacity, which could be hundreds and hundreds, I don't know, maybe thousands of people. Yet churches are limited to 50 total congregants, no matter what the size of their building is. It's just, this is discrimination, pure and simple. It has gone on for too long. I've asked the Justice Department to open a civil rights investigation into this issue and into every state that is practicing this form of discrimination. But we should not lose sight of the fact that the United States Supreme Court is falling down on its constitutional responsibilities here. And I have to say, this is really of a piece with what we have seen from this court. The imperial judiciary lives, Tony. It is alive and well, and that this Supreme Court is as imperial a court as we have ever had.
But does this not undermine the rule of law in our country when we can't even go by the very words that are in the Constitution?
It absolutely does undermine the rule of law. A basic tenet of the rule of law is that citizens are supposed to, A, be the lawmakers, either directly or through their elected representatives. B, everybody is supposed to know what the law says and is. In this case, we've got elected officials in some states who are disregarding the laws of probably their states and certainly of the United States Constitution and we have a United States Supreme Court that thinks that it's a super legislature, that it can just make up the law as it goes along, or in this case, bless and condone the unconstitutional acts of state officials. And who's to say? So, I mean, the way that the Supreme Court has treated these church cases, we'll just have to find out in a later case what the rules are. I mean, when they just say change with the case, who knows? So this is antithetical to the rule of law. It's very dangerous.
You can find out more about Josh Hawley when you visit tonyperkins.com. Also, while you're there, consider donating to the mission of Family Research Council and help us fulfill our mission to be your voice in Washington, D.C. for biblical principles and impact even more lives with the truth. Again, that's tonyperkins.com.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy of Man to Man wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Tuesday's edition of Washington Watch Live, FRC President Tony Perkins talked about the security of our country and the riots that have broken out around the U.S., specifically in Portland. With more, here's Tony Perkins.
All right, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Jerry Nadler of New York, recently claimed the violence in Portland was a myth. Well, today, Nadler's committee, the House Judiciary Committee, held a hearing in which the Attorney General of the United States, William Barr, testified. The details of this myth were front and center as Ohio Congressman Steve Chabot asked the AG a question about Portland.
Mr. Attorney General, would it be accurate to say that it's this administration's responsibility, and of course you're part of the administration, to see that federal laws are upheld and that the federal property is secure and safe and protected? Is that correct?
That's right, Congressman. They're sort of distinct missions. One mission is to enforce federal law. The other is protecting federal property, and specifically U.S. courthouses, which are the heart of federal property in all 93 jurisdictions in the United States. And we have the obligation to protect federal courts, and the U.S. Marshals specifically have been given that obligation. Federal courts are under attack. Since when is it okay to try to burn down a federal court? If someone went down the street to the Prettyman Court here, that beautiful courthouse we have right at the bottom of the hill, and started breaking windows and firing industrial-grade fireworks in to start a fire, throw kerosene balloons in and start fires in the court, is that okay? Is that okay now? No, the U.S. Marshals have a duty to stop that and defend the courthouse, and that's what we are doing in Portland. We are at the courthouse defending the courthouse. We're not out looking for trouble.
Thank you, General. And as far as weapons and devices that were utilized by the group of people, and you mentioned trying to destroy the courthouse. I mean, they were literally trying to burn it down and apparently didn't give a hoot about the people that were occupied in the building as well. So people were in danger.
That is absolutely right.
So as far as the weapons that you mentioned, let me get this straight. My understanding is that the people attacking the building had, among other things, rifles, explosives, knives, saws, sledgehammers, tasers, slingshots, rocks, bricks, lasers. Have I missed anything, or does that about cover it?
You have missed some things, but that's a good list.
Joining us now is the Acting Secretary of Homeland Security, Secretary Chad Wolf. Mr. Secretary, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thanks, Tony. Appreciate you having me on.
So, Mr. Secretary, I'm going to jump right into the heart of this. Is the violence in Portland a myth?
Absolutely not. We see it going on for over 55 days, straight days in a row. Very, very violent activity late at night, early in the morning. We see all of the weapons that you just highlighted in that segment. We see that and more. We see power tools, and we see accelerants. We see commercial-grade fireworks. We see a variety of weapons and tactics being used against the federal courthouse there and against our law enforcement officers. We have over around 190 law enforcement officer injuries since July 1st. So this idea that it is peaceful protesting, we do see that in Portland. We support that. But that's not what occurs in the early morning hours of every single day. We see very, very violent activity. Again, we're going to stay there. We're going to continue to protect that courthouse. And we continue to urge state and local leaders and law enforcement to do their job, to hold these people accountable. These individuals are congregating and assembling on city streets and in city parks, and they don't have a right to do that. But city officials need to hold them accountable.
Mr. Secretary, some have claimed that the protests in Portland were peaceful until the Department of Homeland Security expanded its presence and investigated the violence there.
Yeah, again, inaccurate. So thanks for bringing that up, Tony. What you hear in the news media a lot is very inaccurate statements, and they have all been debunked one way or another. So the vast majority of DHS law enforcement personnel arrived after the mayor made a statement in early July indicating that the violence in Portland had been ongoing for more than a month and that groups continue to target the Justice Center and other buildings and the attacks undermine public safety. That's a quote from the mayor. So that assertion is true before DHS arrived, and it's certainly true after DHS arrived. And again, this idea that simply enforcing federal law and holding criminals accountable is somehow inciting violence is a false statement, in my view, and completely inaccurate and misleading.
Well, I guess, Mr. Secretary, the response from their perspective would be we no longer enforce laws in the country. Would that eliminate violence?
That seems to be. It seems to be what they are suggesting, particularly as it relates to the federal facility, the federal courthouse there in Portland, as well as the protection of our officers. So the idea and really the atmosphere that has been fostered there in Portland is you can have a violent criminal come up to the fence line that we have put up outside the courthouse there in Portland. You can have them do any number of violent activities. You can have them throw a Molotov cocktail. You can have them throw a firework, a commercial-grade firework at a law enforcement officer's head or a laser and try to put it in their eyes and then step back across the street on city property and say, you can't do anything to me. We reject that notion. You have to hold people accountable. In every other city across America, it is the state and local law enforcement that help us do that job. We don't see that yet in Portland. And we're going to continue to, again, protect that courthouse. And we are making arrests. We've made over 75 arrests since the beginning of July, and we'll continue to do that to hold the criminals that are doing this accountable.
Mr. Secretary, let me ask you about that, because some have claimed that these are unidentified federal officers who are arresting people in Portland, meaning they have no uniform, no identification on.
Thanks again, Tony. So again, another myth that certain news organizations like to portray because it's easy for them. It's a talking point. We have debunked that myth again. We have put out pictures of the uniforms that DHS wears. We are a uniform department and have a number of agencies that are uniformed. They are different uniforms for the different missions that they do. FPS is a blue uniform, very similar to that you would see to traditional law enforcement. But we have other uniforms, but regardless of the uniforms, they say police on the front and the back. They have a DHS patch on them, usually on their shoulder, that identifies them, not only DHS, but which agency within DHS. So it's very clearly visible, marked, and we identify ourselves. And I would just say, these are individuals that have been, DHS law enforcement, have been out there, again, for 56, 57 straight nights, in some cases. And the instigators, the criminals, the violent opportunists know exactly who this are. So this idea that they don't know who law enforcement is, again, is just completely inaccurate.
Well, Mr. Secretary, we're going to have to leave it there, but I would add that I think if you withdraw, it spreads to other cities. Thanks so much for joining us. Folks, don't go away.
You can find out more about Secretary Wolf when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'd also encourage you to help FRC continue to produce this radio program. Just visit TonyPerkins.com and click on the donate button. That's TonyPerkins.com.
In today's culture, it can be difficult for men to navigate what it means to be a man and to find clear models of masculinity and manhood. There are many competing ideas out there and even confusion around the basic concepts of gender and sex. Join a Stand Courageous Men's Conference near you and tackle the critical aspects of masculinity. It's led by men who are seasoned, compassionate leaders who understand the issues of the day and will invest in you as a man. Join us at one of our upcoming events. Learn more at standcourageous.com.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. With all of the riots sparked in part by the death of George Floyd, and now major sports around the country getting started, with at the very least a loose association with Black Lives Matter, Tony Perkins sat down on Tuesday to talk with FRC's Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance, Ken Blackwell, about BLM's true agenda.
Ken Blackwell, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's good to be with you.
So what is the goal of Black Lives Matter as an organization? Is it black lives, or is there something else that they're really after?
Their goal is to fundamentally transform America. They think that America is irreparably damaged and can only be bettered by completely being destroyed. Look, if Black Lives Matter... If you take a look at the 7 years that that organization's been around, they've raised over $1 billion. They haven't had one neighborhood cleanup, sent one poor black child to college, bought school supplies, fed the hungry, or donated to a food bank, or provided housing to one black poor family. Yeah, this is an organization dedicated to America's destruction, It's an organization led by self-defined Marxists.
Right.
And so it's pretty clear.
Well, you're right. In a 2015 interview, the organizers, Garza and Colors, said, quote, myself and Alicia in particular are trained organizers. We're trained Marxists. And they've been, some of them have been hanging out with Maduro down in Venezuela. And then you look at what statements have been made from, like, the leader in New York, the president of the Greater New York Black Lives Matter. He said, we're going to burn this system down. And he was on an interview with Fox, and this is what he said. I just want black liberation and black sovereignty by any means necessary. Should we believe him?
Tony, look, I've crisscrossed the globe. And I've studied world history. And if you take a look at what has been the practice of tyrants, you understand that Black Lives Matter is an organization at the tip of the spear of the council culture. And tyrants and authoritarians and Marxists have basically throughout history tried to destroy cultures, whether it was Nazis who stole countless and billions of dollars in art and historical and religious treasures from Jewish families to eliminate Jewish culture, whether it was the Taliban that destroyed ancient Buddha statues. ISIS destroyed the statues and other irreplaceable artifacts.
Right.
This Black Lives Matter is part of a totalitarian Marxist force in this country that has taken a title, a label that is aspirational, but they've in fact used it as cover for their march toward destroying American culture. They want to cancel out.
This is not your commentary on them. This is based upon what they have said and stated. I mean, when you look at what you go to their website, you look at their list of demands. One of them is they proclaim, quote, we disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages. We've heard that term before, that collectively care for one another. I mean, you've not nailed this. When you look at what's happening in the black community, it's the destruction of the family, and they want to accelerate it.
Oh, absolutely. And, Tony, look, the greatest challenge we face in the 244th year of our constitutional republic is, do we have the moral courage and political will to check an ever-increasing capacity for self-destruction when we stand on the sidelines and we let these people march towards the destruction of our country.
So, Ken Blackwell, why are corporations and even pastors, you know, putting up the Black Lives Matter banner and marching under that banner, knowing that they want to destroy the nuclear family? They also partner with the Movement for Black Lives, which calls for abolishing all police, all prisons. And, I mean, they want to retroactively decriminalize, immediately release, and record expungement of all drug-related offenses and prostitutions, and reparations for the devastating impact of the war on drugs and criminalization of prostitution. These are their words.
Their words, and anybody that buys into it has to be, let me be charitable, stuck on stupid.
This is dangerous, and what's happening is that this combined with the cancel culture, people are afraid, and so they're stepping back. And I believe this is, of course, it was an opportunistic time when what happened with George Floyd, which was a tragedy, but they seized the moment because they were ready, and it coincides with an election. And I believe there's going to be an all-out intimidation to try to keep people from voting and pushing back against this agenda.
You're absolutely right, Tony. Look, we have a choice, a fundamental choice, and we're seeing it played out in Chicago, in Detroit, in Portland. Do we choose to be a nation of cities that are fields of dreams for our children, or do we, in fact, surrender to these idiots and, in fact, watch our cities become killing fields?
Well, we're seeing it unfold. It's time to stand up. Ken Blackwell, thanks so much for sounding the alarm all across America.
Thank you, Tony.
You can find out more about Ken Blackwell when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'd also encourage you to help FRC continue to produce this radio program. Just visit TonyPerkins.com and click on the donate button. That's TonyPerkins.com.
Do Christians have a biblical obligation to participate in government? Do Christians have a duty to vote? And if so, what principles should inform them while casting their ballots? How should pastors think about politics? And how can they shepherd their congregations well during an election season? Family Research Council's new second edition of Biblical Principles for Political Engagement provides biblical wisdom and clear answers to these questions to help you navigate the political landscape this election year. To access this important resource, visit frc.org/engage.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. With big tech in the spotlight this week during hearings on Capitol Hill, it was a bit of a surprise that Twitter was banning conservatives left and right, most notably Donald Trump Jr. Larry Thompson, who is the executive director of the Fixed Point Foundation, joined Tony on Tuesday to talk about Twitter refusing to promote his article linking Marxism to the riots we've been seeing around the country. Here's Tony Perkins.
Larry, welcome to Washington Watch.
It's great to be with you, Tony.
So, Larry, I read many of your pieces and agree with you 100% with what we see, what's unfolding. And I do think that if you know Rules for Radicals, Solonensky, that's what's unfolding right now. So let's just start with this. I want it from your lips to the listeners' ears. What's behind the violence that is unfolding in cities like Portland?
Sure. You know, I think the average American looks at this, Tony, and they originally thought, I think many taking them for their own word, that this was about George Floyd. This was about police brutality. This was about racial inequality. But then as things start to move along, you begin to see attacks on courthouses and federal buildings and private property and smashing and looting. And then statues of abolitionists and others being toppled, and people began scratching their heads and wondering, what is this all about? And so I wrote a piece called, at first it was a lecture that I gave, a keynote address titled Understanding What is Happening in America, and I turned it into a column that your listeners can find on my website at LarryAlexTaunton.com. But basically what I'm saying there, Tony, is this is they are following a Marxist agitator's playbook written by Solonensky, as you mentioned, called Rules for Radicals.
And they're doing it pretty well, and they're intimidating people, and they're causing people to step back and give them free rein. But
Larry, lots of money.
Well, from corporate boardrooms to even pastors who are standing up and giving their support. But you also point to this idea. They're playing on a sense of guilt that we really shouldn't have as Christians
That's
in
right.
America.
Yeah, no, exactly. You know, I have a book coming out this fall called Around the World in More Than 80 Days, Discovering What Makes America Great and Why We Have to Save It. And, you know, in going to some 55 countries, Tony, I basically took the left seriously at their claim that America is a terrible place, that there's such inequality, that it's a horrible place to live. And yet, you know, much of the world wants to come to the United States. And what you discover is what I refer to as, you made mention of my book by the same title, the grace effect. And what I mean by that little term I coined, is a way of saying that any culture that has been touched by a significant presence of Christians in it, it changes that culture, and grace goes out to affect both believer and unbeliever alike. And to make some comparison here to what we're talking about, you know, does America have sins? For sure. But take a country like Germany. There are generations of Germans that had absolutely nothing to do with the Holocaust who can't seem to move past it. And it's paralyzed them so that their guilt is used against them, and where they're not capable of making sound moral judgments. But America has always been very different. We've been able to move on from our past sins, and that's not because we are an inherently good people, but because we have found goodness in the goodness of God, and thus we found healing in our Christian core and our beliefs.
Larry, we're out of time, but this is a conversation I want to continue. We're going to have you back on again real soon to have a longer conversation. Thanks so much for joining us.
Delighted to do it, Tony. Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234. 372-7234.